Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nainar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Sunil Amrit's The Burning Earth, an environmental history of the last 500 years, is a global history of ecological transformation and human ambition. Written by a Yale historian known for work on migration, empire, and the environment, the book examines how modern environmental crises emerge from centuries of conquest, extraction, industrial expansion, war, and the pursuit of freedom from natural limits, rather than treating climate change as a recent technical problem. Amrit places it within a longer history of political power, colonial violence, economic inequality, and changing ideas about progress. The book ranges across continents and historical episodes, connecting mining, agriculture, energy systems, urbanization, imperial rule, and social struggle. Its purpose is not only to describe environmental damage, but to show how human histories and planetary histories have always been intertwined. It is both a work of environmental history and a broad interpretation of modern world history through ecological consequences. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the pursuit of freedom from nature as a central historical force. A central idea in The Burning Earth is that modern history has often been driven by the desire to escape natural limits. Amrit does not present freedom only as a political ideal or moral achievement. He examines how certain versions of freedom depended on conquering distance, climate, soil, disease, rivers, forests, and energy constraints. This makes the book unusual because it connects high ideals of progress with their material foundations. Railways, mines, plantations, fossil fuels, dams, and engineered cities all appear as tools that expanded human capacity while also intensifying ecological damage. The point is not that all technological ambition is destructive, but that the dream of unlimited mastery has repeatedly obscured dependence on fragile environmental systems. This framework helps explain why environmental crisis is not an accidental side effect of modernity. It is tied to a long pattern in which powerful states and companies treated nature as an obstacle, a storehouse, or a battlefield. Amrit's argument is especially important because it shows that freedom detached from ecological responsibility can become a form of domination, both over landscapes and over vulnerable people. Secondly, empire and extraction as engines of planetary change. The book gives particular weight to empire as a mechanism of environmental transformation. Amrit shows that colonial rule was not only a political system, but also an ecological project. Empires reorganized land, labor, water, forests, minerals, and crops to serve distant markets and imperial priorities. Mining centers, plantation zones, ports, and transport corridors remade local environments while concentrating wealth elsewhere. Examples associated with the book's scope include extractive frontiers such as silver mining in the Americas, gold mining in southern Africa, and oil production around the Caspian region. These cases matter because they reveal a recurring pattern: environmental damage was often exported to places where political resistance could be suppressed and human lives were considered expendable. Amrit's global approach also prevents the story from becoming a simple account of industrialization in Europe and North America. He foregrounds the Global South as a central arena where modern environmental history was made. This perspective clarifies why present climate vulnerability is unevenly distributed. Many regions now facing severe ecological risk were also sites where imperial extraction depleted land, displaced communities, and tied local economies to global systems of resource demand. Thirdly, war, fossil energy, and the acceleration of environmental destruction. Amrit treats war as one of the major forces linking environmental history to state power. Modern wars have required enormous quantities of fuel, metal, food, timber, chemicals, and transport infrastructure. They have also accelerated technologies that later shaped civilian economies, including mechanized extraction, large-scale logistics, aviation, synthetic materials, and fossil fuel dependence. In this view, war is not an interruption of environmental history, it is one of its most intense forms. The mobilization of resources during the World Wars and the Cold War era helped normalize the idea that nature could be rapidly converted into strategic power. This matters because many environmental histories focus primarily on markets or industrial capitalism. Amrit adds the role of military urgency and geopolitical competition, showing how states justified destructive interventions through security, survival, and national development. The book also suggests that the ecological consequences of war extend beyond battlefields. Landscapes are mined, drilled, dammed, polluted, and reorganized to support armies and industrial supply chains by linking fossil energy with conflict. Amrit helps readers see climate change as connected to the political history of power, violence, and national ambition, not merely to consumer choice. Environmental damage and social inequality as inseparable histories. One of the book's strongest contributions is its insistence that ecological harm cannot be separated from human inequality. Amrith does not write environmental history as a story of nature, damaged by humanity in general. He asks which people benefited, which people paid the costs, and how power determined exposure to risk, pollution, hunger, displacement, dangerous labor, and resource exhaustion often fell most heavily on enslaved people, colonized subjects, indigenous communities, migrants, industrial workers, and the poor. This approach changes the moral and analytical structure of environmental history. It challenges explanations that treat environmental crisis as the result of a universal human tendency toward overuse. Instead, it highlights systems of ownership, coercion, race, empire, and capital. The book also shows why environmental justice is not a recent add onto climate politics. It is built into the history of how landscapes were transformed and how wealth was accumulated. This framing helps explain the political difficulty of addressing climate change today. If environmental destruction has historically produced unequal gains and losses, then repair cannot be limited to emissions reductions or conservation. It must also confront the institutions and historical debts that made ecological damage profitable. Lastly, repair, urban environments, and alternatives to ecological fatalism. Although The Burning Earth is often bleak in its account of destruction, it does not reduce environmental history to catastrophe. Amrith is interested in how different forms of environmental consciousness can emerge, including in cities and engineered landscapes that are sometimes treated as separate from nature. This is important because modern environmental thought has often privileged wilderness, forests, and rural landscapes. Amrith's broader perspective recognizes cities as ecological spaces shaped by water, heat, waste, energy, food supply, disease, and infrastructure. That emphasis makes the book more relevant to a world in which most people live in urban or urbanizing regions. The book also resists simple despair. Its hope is not based on a single technological breakthrough or a claim that history naturally bends toward repair. Instead, it points toward dispersed forms of action, local adaptation, collective agency, and renewed recognition of human dependence on other living systems. This dimension matters because historical understanding can otherwise become paralyzing. By showing that ideas of freedom, development, and nature have changed over time, Amrith leaves room for different futures grounded in interdependence rather than conquest. In conclusion, The Burning Earth is best suited for readers who want a historically deep account of climate and environmental crisis rather than a narrow policy book or a technical explanation of global warming. It will be valuable to students of environmental history, global history, colonialism, political economy, climate justice, and energy systems. General readers who want to understand why present ecological problems are tied to older patterns of empire, extraction, war, and inequality will also find it useful. Its practical benefit lies in reframing the problem environmental crisis appears not as a recent failure of awareness, but as the result of long-standing institutions and assumptions about progress, power, and freedom. Its intellectual benefit is the way it connects events and regions that are often studied separately, compared with many books in environmental history. Amrith's work stands out for its global scale, narrative accessibility, and integration of social justice with ecological analysis. It is less focused on one nation, one ecosystem, or one commodity than many comparable studies. Instead, it offers a broad synthesis that links mines, cities, wars, plantations, fossil fuels, and political ideals into a single interpretive history. That breadth is its distinguishing feature and its main reason for relevance. If you would like to support Sunil Amrith, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.